Tech News Briefing for Monday, December 2nd. I'm Kateri Yoakum from the newsroom of The Wall Street Journal in New York. Click to pay. If you were shopping online this weekend, you probably saw that more than once. And there's a reason for that, or actually several reasons. We'll find out more from our Heard on the Street columnist Telos Demos in just a minute. But first, let's check some headlines. Chinese telecom giant Huawei is preparing a lawsuit to fight a recent Federal Communications Commission decision that will ban rural American telecom carriers from purchasing Huawei's gear. The suit will mark the second time Huawei has taken legal action against the U.S. in an escalating battle with Washington. The company's steps to retain its business with the U.S. come despite public comments to the contrary. In an interview with The Wall Street Journal, Huawei's founder and CEO, Ren Zhengfei, said this.
The trade discussion between China and the United States has nothing to do with Huawei. Even without the United States, we can survive.
Since the tension began, the company's drastically increased its spending on Washington lobbyists and undergone a PR makeover. And it's Cyber Monday. Consumers are forecast to spend more than $9 billion online today, according to Adobe Analytics. One word of warning, you're not the only ones looking to score this holiday shopping season. Security researchers say that online scammers are ramping up too, both with an increase in popular techniques like sending phishing emails and more complex ones, like look-alike domains that you could mistake for a real website. They say shoppers should be wary of those too-good-to-be-true bargains and check to make sure that sales tied to charitable giving are legit. The Department of Homeland Security says you should stick to reputable retailers, don't provide credit card information over email, and check your internet connections to make sure your privacy and security settings are protected. Online shopping always sounds like the easiest thing in the world, but we all know it's got some hiccups. You spend a bunch of time searching for the items you like, you put them in your shopping cart, and then you have to start to fill out all the forms to get it sent to you. Address, email, and your credit card information. And that's where you get stuck because your wallet is in the next room or at home or you've run out of time. If you can relate to that scenario, you're not alone. It's called cart abandonment, and it's obviously not great for businesses, so digital payment companies are trying to improve that experience. Here to tell us more is our Heard on the Street columnist, Telos Demos. Telos, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
All right. First of all, this idea of cart abandonment, how big of a deal is this?
Well, so on previous Black Fridays, most recently in 2018, more than 80% of carts were abandoned, according to one study. So if you think about that, think of whatever the sales of Black Friday are, hundreds of billions of dollars. There's 80% more than that that was just sort of sitting there. Now, some people use shopping carts as a way to store items, remember them. So experts say that, you know, some big portion of that is probably not stuff that was ever really going to get sold. But some part of that are things that people might have otherwise bought if they didn't run into some problem. That problem could be something on their own side. Maybe they don't trust the retailer. The retailer says, here, enter your card digits. And you're like, I've never shopped here before. I've heard about all these, you know, hackings of credit card information. I'd rather not. So they move on. In other cases, it might just be that you run out of time. Your wallet's in the other room. Suddenly the kids start screaming. You kind of forget what you're doing and you're moving on. Those are the types of abandonments that people think can be improved upon.
So digital payment companies are using something called click-to-pay buttons. Can you just explain what these are? I mean, I'm sure we've all seen them, but just to kind of give us what is actually behind these click-to-pay buttons.
Okay, so picture you're shopping online, you put something in your cart, you go to the cart, you get to the part where it says pay. There are forms that might say enter your credit card number, expiration date, etc. Next to those are, or you could pay this way. And there are a couple of what people in the industry call buttons. And they look like little click-on buttons that are a faster way to do that. The most popular one, the most well-known one, is probably PayPal. Some retailers have their own button because you've shopped with them before. So they might say, hey, just use your information on file with us and click to pay again. One reason that buttons are important to payments companies is that they either tie you to paying for something with their method or conversely, it might allow you to pay for things with other ways, right? So the big development in payments buttons is that Visa, MasterCard, American Express, and Discover have launched a new version of, they've had payments buttons for a little while. They were moderately successful. They're now relaunching, as a group, one big button that they want to have you start seeing everywhere next year. And part of what's behind that is they want you to continue using your credit card. And so anything that makes credit cards harder to use, such as that like guest checkout form where you're entering in your number, is a friction that they want to eliminate. They want to make credit cards as easy to use as anything else that you might be presented with. For other companies, there's an opportunity to use that button as a way to say, hey, you don't have to use your credit card.
We've been talking about the ease of finishing that transaction for kind of the consumer end. What are some of the other reasons to use these click-to-pay buttons? Are there any other benefits to them?
Payments companies have incentives for you to use their button. If a retailer offers PayPal and you click on the PayPal button, PayPal might make more money when you do that. You also might use that payments company's other tools, right? For example, PayPal offers credit. Some companies, some other buttons also offer credit. That is, you would borrow money from them to complete your purchase. There are other financial services, other aspects of what that company is trying to get you to do with them. For example, Apple. You might want to use your Apple Cash. You might want to use your Apple Card. All of those things are things that are linked to that button experience. So for the retailer, yes, it's about, I just want to complete this sale. I just want to get it done. But for the payment company that's offering that button, it's a way to either make more money for them, because just processing a credit card payment online, obviously merchants don't pay a lot for that. That's a very commoditized thing. It happens billions of times a day. It's not a big deal. But using that button, the retailer might actually pay a little bit more to the payment company for that. So from a consumer's point of view, the incentive is it's faster, it feels safer. You might have other products tied into that button. From the retailer's point of view, they might complete a sale that they otherwise wouldn't have. And from the payments company's point of view, it's really an entry point to moving up the value chain from just being the basic old, okay, we're just going to make sure this credit card number is valid, okay, it is, boom, here's the payment, to, we're offering the merchant, to the retailer, this whole financial experience with us.
You said something about it being safer. Is there a fraud aspect here? Are these payment buttons safer than just putting your information in online?
In theory, they should be. When you enter credit card information into a website, hopefully that retailer has taken all the right steps to protect that information, but it's not quite the same thing as when you're clicking a button. A button is you've stored information with this payment company in some other place, right? So like you've stored it with PayPal in the past. PayPal's entire business is payments. So, you know, to most consumers, and I think this is true, presumably they are more careful about sort of that information than just a form on a website, on a retailer's website might be. And so when you're clicking to pay, you're not giving your credit card number to anybody. You're just sort of PayPal or whoever it is basically validating to the retailer, okay, this person's good, here's their money. You're not actually moving any credit card numbers around. That's why it has that sort of safety factor for the consumer, especially.
You also said that this is something that they can make into a bigger business. And I know that people are concerned not just about whether or not their financial information is safe, but whether other information about them is safe, right? So now you're not just saying, I'm giving you my credit card information, but now the people who have my credit card information also know what kind of socks I like and what kind of detergent I buy and all of those things. Is getting data on consumers a big deal here?
Data is a big component of all of these payments services. One of the big disputes that payment companies and retailers have is who gets the data. Because the more that you leave the retailer's environment to do your payment, right? So say you click to pay the button, you basically go to someone else's website, complete the transaction over there, and then you go back to the retailer to finish it. A lot of your information is now in the hands of that payment company. On the other hand, maybe the payment company doesn't know what you're buying, right? So there's always kind of little deals made between these companies on who shares and gets this information. So for a consumer, yeah, you are now interacting with more parties. And if you're concerned about who's keeping track of what you're buying and looking at, there are aspects of this that might be concerning to you.
When you talk about Apple Pay and Amazon, and I don't actually ever think of those as being payment companies. that I'm working through. I don't ever think of them as being separate entities from the company that I'm putting my information in on. You know what I mean? And that's interesting to me that it's a separate financial entity that's earning extra money on that little transaction that I'm doing.
One thing that I think is interesting about all this is that it's kind of blending and blurring exactly who's a payment company and who's not. Your primary relationship with Apple is you own their device. You don't think of Apple as a financial company. Maybe you even have an Apple card, but you still don't necessarily think of Apple as a payments company. But what's happening now is that the financial part of what's going on here, the financial nuts and bolts that used to belong exclusively to financial companies, is now easier to do. All that has been sort of widgetized and all that. And financial companies don't want to just stuck being financial companies either. They kind of want to be technology companies. So they're trying to work more with the Apples and Amazons of the world to embed themselves into the device that you have in your hand, into the place where you shop, and vice versa. Apple is saying, look, we've put this device in your hand. If we can then offer you improved financial experiences through this device, that's just one more reason you have to get an iPhone.
I think that's fascinating. And who do you think is going to win?
I would say few people have won betting against credit cards. That said, we're at the beginning of a new era. This is a time when, like I said, there are many different types of companies and payment types that are coming about. Maybe this is the beginning of where we start to see other payment types start to take some share from credit card companies.
Heard on the Street columnist Telos Dimos, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And that was your Tech News Briefing. I'm Kateri Yoakum from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.